Moshe special is something else, is the qualitative difference of his nevuah. It's a completely different thing. And why is this so important? Because that was Miriam's mistake. And then, by the way, who else made the same kind of mistake?
The Meraglim.
This is the Smichas Aparshios. Because the Meraglim should have seen she doesn't recognize specialness and uniqueness when she should have. And they did the same thing. Because, you know, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, is Eretz Yisrael the most beautiful country in the world? Physically? Maybe. My wife never lets me say otherwise. But if, you know, when I think about it, you know, the Alps are pretty nice. The Grand Canyon is not bad, right? There's all sorts of other places that one might think are nicer looking, nicer experiences, nicer aesthetics. And if you treat Eretz Yisrael and you're assessing it like you would assess buying a piece of land, buying a piece of property, then you're going to make a mistake. Because it is a completely segula aretz that has to be viewed in its own category. You can't make that comparison. You can't think of it in terms that you would think of other lands. It is a place that Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Oso Tamid Mireshis Hashana Achris Hashana. It's a place that is unique. It's unique. It doesn't matter if it's not as beautiful because it's segula. It's special. So the Meraglim unfortunately didn't pick up on this major avera of not understanding that when something is designated unique by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to respect that. And this is such a fundamental thing. It's part of the Shei Sechiros, really, because without understanding that the Nevuah of Moshe and Taurus Moshe is special and unique, you're in a very dangerous zone. The whole Masorah depends on it. Our entire Masorah, the way I'll read to you from Rav Beis Din in Reflections of the Rav, who has this whole piece over there, and it's very kedai to see the whole thing. So he sums it up like this. Miriam had readily conceded Moshe's superiority to other prophets, that he possessed greater intellect and saintliness, and he towered over them qualitatively. She failed, however, to discern his segula quality, that he was the only mortal ever to achieve such closeness to Hashem. He was not merely greater, which is not important, he was different. The standing of Moshe was altogether different from the other Nevi'im. Miriam's Averu was her failure to acknowledge this difference. That's why it's included in the Shei Sechiros, to emphasize the uniqueness of Moshe's prophecy, since acceptance of the authority of his teachings is the foundation of our entire Masorah. Now I get it. That's what it's doing in the Shei Sechiros. But then, Soloveitchik continued, said, the Meraglim, then, Rashi points out, made the same mistake. They witnessed Miriam's problems of not recognizing Moshe as a segula, and they made the same mistake when it came to Eretz Yisrael. A segula Navi was leading a segula people into a segula land, and they failed to recognize it. So, what we've kind of started, if you haven't figured out yourselves where I'm going with this, is Moshe is a segula Navi, Eretz Yisrael is a segula land, and we're a segula people. So what does it mean? All the same. The word segula means the same. It means unique, different, special. Not necessarily superior. Not necessarily elite. So what does it mean? What does it mean then? In what sense? What's this difference? What's the special thing of the Am? What is the Am segula? What is it all about? So that really opens up a very famous and too often misunderstood machlokas between the Rambam and Rav Yehuda Halevi and the Maharal. The Kuzari, which is the Sefer written by Rav Yehuda Halevi, is very, very famous for presenting the following idea that could have led some to the plant theory that we talked about before. He says like this. He says, we are the Am Hanivcha, we are the Am Segula. True, 100%. So what is it that makes us that way? What's special about us? So he says, well, we are genetically different than everybody else. And it starts with Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon was given a midah, an ability to communicate with Hashem, with the spiritual world, that was very special. Why was he so special and perfect? Well, he was created by Hashem himself. There were no three shutfin in his creation. It was Hashem. And that special inyan Eloki, that special midah that he got, was then genetically transmitted only to select people, right? Down, just to make it short, to Noah, to Abraham, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, and to Yaakov's children, and then to the entire Jewish people. We are intrinsically, according to the Kuzari, intrinsically different and superior in a way. We have an inyan eloki that no one else has. Our neshamos are different. There's no debating this. And the Maharal felt very strongly about this. And many Baalei Kabbalah feel the same way. There is a difference between Jews and non-Jews that's intrinsic to the neshamos. The neshamos are not all the same. Okay. Sounding interesting. Sounding a little chauvinistic, but we'll see. Comes along the Rambam, right? We should mention, the Rambam had a very radically different perception. Because Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he said, he took his idea that we are so special, and he used it to answer a question. The question that the Kuzar, asked the Chavar. He asked them, how come Hashem didn't give the Torah to everybody? Why did Hashem only give the Torah to the Jewish people? So, what do you think he answered? He said, wait, weren't you listening to what I said before? We are the special people. We are the people with that special midah. The only ones who can get the Torah is us. Right? And he cites the famous Sifri and the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that talks about how it was offered to others, but it really wasn't offered to others because they couldn't get it. Yishmael, Zerotzeach, and the various problems that they had genetically, that they couldn't receive the Torah. But we, the Ama Nifchar, with the special Inyan Eloki that comes from Adam, etc., only we could get it. And that's why we got the Torah. Comes along the Rambam, he asks the very same question. In the Moreh Nevuchim, he says, why did the Jewish people get the Torah? If the Torah is so special, why doesn't everyone get it? You know what the Rambam answers? He answers, Ratzon Hashem. Who's Ratzon Hashem? He does not espouse this idea of different levels of neshamos at all. He almost says, some people understood the Rambam this way. It's going to sound a little radical, but this is really a parish that some people give to the Rambam. Not quite random, but someone had to do it. In other words, the divine plan was that one entity, one nation was going to get the Torah, and then we'll see what happens. But it had to be someone, so it was us. That's a very radical idea. Others soften up the Rambam a little and say, no, it's Ratzon Hashem, we don't understand why, but he picked us. But not because of the reason of the Kuzar. Not at all because of that. And really, the Rambam, when he speaks about these ideas, he has very universalist things to say. He says in a very famous Rambam where it talks about why wasn't Shevet Levi Zocher to a Nachla? Why didn't they get Nachla? Because Hashem set them aside for a special privilege of having be the ones that are going to be the closest Mishar Se Hashem. And then, very surprisingly, out of nowhere, the Rambam says the following. Velo shevet Levi bilvad, ela kol ish de ish mikol bay haolam, asher nedvar rucho oso vevino mideo lehavdel lamod lifnei Hashem lesharso laavdo, ledea es Hashem v'halach yasher kamo she'aso elokim, uparak ma'ot tzavaro al cheshbonos harabim, etc. He will be zocha to the madrega of Kohanim and Leviim. And what's the most important words here for my purposes today? Kol Bai Ha'olam. The Rambam is saying, every neshama, Jew, non-Jew, everyone in the world, has the potential to reach tremendous, tremendous heights. It's a very different flavor. So, this guy that I'm talking to, I'm saying all this, can't believe it or not, and we're going through this, so he's saying, oh, so our machlokis is a machlokis of Yehuda Halevi and the Rambam? I said, no. I know you're making a big mistake, and you're about to miss the whole point. We haven't even once talked about what it really means to be Am Segula. All we're talking about is sort of background information. Because if you want to know the truth, while Rav Yehuda Halevi seems to be a particularist, everyone know what that word means? A particularist is somebody who thinks it's all about us. It's all about the Jews. Everything else is unimportant. He's the opposite of a universalist. He doesn't care about the rest of the world. Even he, actually, is really not saying that at all. Even Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, even in the Kuzari, the ultimate message is a tremendously universalist message. Where do we see this? Where do you see it first? What's the most obvious indication, almost ironic? Who is this Sefer about? What's going on in the Sefer? It's about a person named Kuzari, the Kuzar. Who was he? A Jew? He's not a Jew at all. He's a non-Jew who had a dream, a prophecy. He had a prophecy. Whoa, right there's a communication. And not only that, but the whole objective of the Sefer is to bring him in, is to expose him and let him enjoy the same zchuyos that the Jews have. And more than that, in the Sefer, Rav Yehuda Halevi has parables that say the same idea. There's the parable of the seed, that the Jewish people are the seed that will blossom into fruit for the whole world. And then he talks about how we're the heart and the body for the whole world, and we're each interdependent. We're dependent on each other. Ultimately, I think it's summarized well what the Kuzari is really saying by a Hakdama that was written to the Sefer. Particularism could seem to go no further than this concentration of religion on one people and the exclusion of the rest of the world. But the bare fact that the theme of the book is the conversion of a heathen king to the Jewish faith should be enough to indicate the true intention of the author. Mankind is not to be excluded from the life of God. Nothing could be further from the spirit and intention of the book. It is primarily a theory of first and last things and of the place of Judaism in this scheme. It was written to remind the Jewish people of that supreme fact. In the moment of deepest danger and decline, Jews and Judaism may be the least of these now. They were and shall be first, but this is a world-embracing scheme involving all men. There is absolutely no question that when read objectively, one realizes that Rav Yehuda Halevi is ultimately a tremendous universalist. And he's telling you that there's a mission. There's a mission for Klal Yisrael, and that is what Segula is. We were Mesugal as a special people with a unique message and a unique job to deliver to the entire world. That's what it means to be Am HaNivchar and Am Segula. Not that we should have the highest IQs, not that we should be such great Nobel Prize winners. None of that, none of that. What it's about is that we have a message that was meant for everyone, all of mankind, and we are the conduits to it. Now, the one who really goes to town with this, not surprisingly, is the Rambam. The Rambam, when he discusses this issue, speaks in incredible terms about it. We're running out of time, so I'm not going to read it. But if you take a look at Hilchos Melachim, Melchamos, he has an amazing thing to say. I'm just going to, I'll say one part of it. Here is where he talks about how Christianity and Islam are successes. They're partial successes in this mission that ultimately we are to carry the entire world towards the idea that will unite the entire world. And he says it with very flowery and glowing terminology. So there's no question that that's exactly what's going on. So there is a segula characteristics for the entire nation of Klal Yisrael, that we are to be the quote-unquote very, very cliched light unto the nations. So how well did we do? How well did this go? Right, this was already been a couple of thousand years that we've been working at this. How well have we done? Have we done well? So who's the best person to ask? The students. Ask the student. You want to know how the Rebbe's doing? Ask the Talmid. So I wanted to just give you quickly a few quotes. Very quick. First one I want to ask is John Adams, second president of the United States. Very, very interesting. He wrote a letter to somebody who was a philosopher and an authority on religion. And he was talking about the Jews. Here's what he has to say. I will insist the Hebrews have contributed more to civilized men than any other nation. They are the most glorious nation that ever inhabited the earth. The Romans and their empire were but a bubble in comparison to them. They have given religion to 3/4 of the globe and have influenced affairs of mankind more and more happily than any other nation, ancient or modern. Wow, that's pretty impressive. Okay, we're doing pretty good. We got an A. We got an A from John Adams, second president of the United States. But I said, what do the historians say? Well, not the Jewish historians. What did the non-Jewish historians say about the Jewish people? So two of the most famous non-Jewish historians, if you're into these things, are Paul Johnson, many of you might have heard of him, it's Rabbi Wein's favorite, just to let you know, and Thomas Cahill, another very, very famous non-Jewish historian. Listen to what they say. Certainly the world without the Jews would have been a radically different place. Humanity might have eventually stumbled upon some of the good Jewish ideas, but we cannot be sure. All the great conceptual discoveries of the intellect and the sense of morality seem obvious and inescapable once you know them, but it requires a special genius to formulate them for the first time. The Jews had this gift. To them we owe the idea of equality before the law, both divine and human, sanctity of life, dignity of human person, individual conscious, and he names about 50 other things. Every fantastic moral idea in history, these non-Jewish historians, and I won't read all the ones that Thomas Cahill writes, are given to us. So apparently as an Am Segula, how did we do? Very well. Very, very well. So how impressed was my friend with this whole thing, right? He wasn't proud to be a Jew. And he was embarrassed to be a Jew because we were so elitist. And we think we're better than everyone else. And that was his understanding of Am Segula. So I'm thinking, all right, maybe I got somewhere now. I've just explained to him, Am Segula means something completely different. Am Segula means we have a job, we have a mission. We're Segula for a mission. That's what's special and different and unique. But he wasn't quite there. Because he didn't relate to it as an individual. I couldn't get him. The test was, play the song again and get him to cry. That's what I wanted. So I said, well, there's another incredibly important factor that's missing. As a whole, we could, as individuals, be swallowed up, right? If we look at the Am Segula mission, so what does that mean to each and every one of us? So we're part of the Jewish people. The Jewish people, centuries, have done great. John Adams is very happy with us. What does it mean for me as an individual? Where's my Segula connection? So it got me thinking, and I'm saying, well, this is a very, very important, and it reminded me of an event, a story that I'll end with in a minute. But first, I want you to understand what I'm getting at. The Netziv, in his Hakdama to Sefer Bereishis, right? In his Hakdama to all the Sefer Torah, he explores the name. There's another name for every Sefer Torah, right? So he explores why this name, what does it mean, what's its connection to the Sefer. So Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYosha. Right, very good. HaYosha, why is it called Sefer HaYosha? That's what the Netziv discusses. What is Yosha? He says because it's about the Avos. Bereishis is about the Avos. And the Avos were Yesharim, like Bilam tells us, right? Yesharim, more than Tzadikim and more than Chassidim. They certainly were Tzadikim also. But what's most important about them is they were Yesharim. What does it mean to be Yesharim? It means, well, a person could be a great Tzadik, meaning really makbid in Halacha and know Halacha really well, and be a great quote-unquote Jew, but not a Yesharim. And that's trouble. That could result in Korban Bayis, for example. It's a very bad thing. So the Netziv writes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yosharu, ve'eno sovel tzadikim ke'elu, ele ba'ofen shahochim b'derach ha'yoshar, gam b'halichos olam, ve'lo be'aknimut, af al gav shu l'shem shamayim, v'ze gorem chorban ha'briya, v'arisos ishu v'aretz. V'ze haya shevach ha'avos, shemilvad shayu tzadikim v'chassidim v'ove Hashem, be'ofen ha'yoser efshar, od hayu yesharim, shehis nagu im umos ha'olam, afilu ovde elilim mechu'arim, what's he saying? The Avos are the greatest role models of Yashrus. What does it mean? They, as personal individuals, acted with the most hideous Ovden of Avazara, still the Yashrus. They were honest with them. They were kind to them. They were charitable to them. Masa Avos Simon Laban. This is a very important part of being part of the Am Segula. But it gets into something that's an incredible hashkafic controversy. Because what's the natural conclusion from this? The natural conclusion from this is that I, as a Jew, if I want to personally fulfill my mission as part of the Am Segula, I should be going out into society and interacting with them and mashpia on them through my actions and my yashrus. Am I really supposed to do that? Am I? Machlokes. Really, machlokes. We have to understand what the machlokes is, and this is where we're going to end with. According to Rav Hirsch, right? Probably the most famous advocate for this. I'll quote one quick thing. Do not shirk the social obligations of pulsating modern life. Do not regret that today's nations in their struggle for enlightenment have invited us in to participate in their social aspirations and that they have opened for the sons of Israel the gates of scientific and civic endeavors and achievements. Rav Hirsch, without reading the rest of it, he's pushing it, he's pushing the fact that we should go out and bring to the world in all their endeavors and all the things they do, right, our yashrus, and we should set the tone and set the standard. It's an incredibly important thing to do. It can create the most amazing Kiddush Hashem. What's the problem? The problem is the risks are tremendously high. There are two major risk factors here. One is assimilation, and that's the little one. That's not the significant risk. Assimilation is certainly a very serious risk, but there's something worse than assimilation. What's worse than assimilation? Chilul Hashem. And Rav Hirsch, I don't have time to read it, but anyone who's interested in it, I'll tell you that this is something, unfortunately, I see all the time, and it pains me when I see it. It's one thing to go out there and say you're going to be part of the Yam Segula, interacting in that world, and then you're going to do things like be inappropriate and lie and steal and be dishonest and curse. Then what you're doing is not only not fulfilling your mission, what you're doing is a chilul Hashem for which there's no kapara. You heard it? It's worse than Ritzicha. Ritzicha has kapara, misa. Chilul Hashem, there's no kapara. There's nothing worse. If you go out as a representative of the Torah and of the Jewish people, and you do these kind of things, that is a chilul Hashem. For this reason, the risk of assimilation and the risk of chilul Hashem, many have opted out. And there are two hashkafas, and this is all like old news, everybody knows about this, right? And Rav Schwab has a whole essay where he beautifully describes these two schools of thought. Is it worth the risk or not? Now that's something everybody's got to think about. I would tell you right now, and I have told people this, as soon as I see them behaving in a certain fashion that it becomes a chilul Hashem, I say, go over to the ghetto. Don't do it. You're not doing anyone a favor by interacting that way. You're not teaching anybody anything good. You're defiling your mission. It's interesting what Schwab puts when he describes the group that have decided to opt out, who feel that it's not worth the risk, and we're going to stay out of that world. Do they deny the mission? So he writes at the end, no, they don't. The ideal relationship between Yisrael and mankind will be reached. This is within the group that is not actively doing a Rav Hirsch, right? When all Yisrael will be regarded as the paragons of saintliness, the universal pace setters of moral behavior, then it shall come to pass that men will consider it a privilege to take on all the work for us, right? And they'll be grateful that we gave them all these great and valuable ethical lessons. What's the point? But from a distance. Do it from Eretz Yisrael. Don't do it from direct interactions. So that's one hashkafa. I just want to end with a story. When I was in, where this really hit home for me, that this is an opportunity if you're able to take the risk and you can be sure of yourself. How are you going to behave? And you want to take that Rav Hirsch Hashkafa and you want to go out there and be a light on an individual personal basis. So what the strength of that is, I learned, it was a couple of years ago, I was walking in Ramat Eshkol, of all places. I'm walking down the street and suddenly I hear some guy calling out my name. Turn around, and I thought maybe I'm hearing things, because there was no one behind me that I recognized. Right? So I keep walking. He's running after me, grabs me in a very comfortable manner, as though like he knew me very well. And I'm looking at him. Who on earth are you? I have no idea who you are. I'm sorry. So he's taken aback. He couldn't believe I didn't recognize him. Right? You'll see why in a second. I'll describe him. A typical Ramat Eshkol guy, right? Handsome, right? Totally yeshivish looking guy. Total, right? Beard, payas. He was totally dressed appropriately. I just could not recognize him. Who was he? So, years ago, when I went to college, some people are going to that college, so listen carefully to the story. I was in a dorm, and this dorm was made up of three groups. There were a whole bunch of, and this is a suite, right? We had tried to get a Shomer Shabbos kosher suite. Didn't work out, whatever. Sometimes they take things away from you, so be careful. They decided that they had to put in a group of non-Jewish people, myself and three of my friends who were Shomer Torah Mitzvot, and this other guy. This other guy was the one we had the least to do with and got along with the least well. He was Jewish. He was one of these self-hating, reform, absolute, not reform, nothing, atheist, antagonistic to religion people. You know, we learned very early on, he's staying away from us, we're staying away from him. We were friendlier with the other guys. So that's who this guy was. That's who he was. That guy. That guy, who apparently he thought we were closer than I realized, but he was a totally different person, as you can imagine. You know, not everyone in Ramana Shkol is antagonistic to religion, am I right? So I'm saying, like, who on earth, what happened to you? How did this happen? I said, was it us? He said, no, not really. So I go, what was it? What changed you? And that's when it hit me. You know what changed him? He said, I'll tell you the truth. You knew that I had wanted nothing to do with Orthodoxy. I thought you guys were weird. I thought you guys were stupid. I wanted nothing to do with it. But what got me was, I was very friendly with those other guys, the non-Jewish guys. And in the beginning of the year, they were like typical guys. Cursing, inappropriate talk about women, inappropriate imaging brought into the room, all sorts of things, lush and hara left and right. And I noticed that over the course of the year, just by you guys being who you are, that all changed. They changed. The non-Jews stopped cursing, were speaking more with an appropriateness, and acted like different people. And I said, wow, what a fortunate thing it is to be a Jew. A Jew, if he just acts like a Jew, really acts like a Ben Torah, if he really acts that way, he can transform people. It's an incredible stos. It's one Ashrenu Matov Chalkeinu. This is it. This is, we're a skula for this. This is what we're supposed to be doing. If you want to go out there, you got to do it. But you got to really do it. Anyone who goes out to that world better be an exemplary example. Because that's the mission. You should all be zocha, either in the safety of distance, or if you are ready for it, go in there and be a role model. Be a role model in everything you do.